So, for some reason I don't understand, I'm having it come up to talk on Remastered Columns. And the first talk is about the general kind of introduction to what is entailed in this metaphor of a column. So I have here the simplest, almost the simplest possible diagram. If you didn't have any words at all, it'd be the simplest. One of the things that happens in a lot of people in reading Lotus Blossom is that they're a little bit squirrely-eyed as a result of the description of the actual experiences, and wonder what the hell is this? And the point is not the particular nature of the experience. The point is the teaching that's embodied in it, and that teaching relates to everyday life and to ordinary, normal training, or it wouldn't have meaning. So. I want to talk about what is just embodied, some of what's embodied, just in this simple idea of the column. And we won't worry about the nature of its reality. That's where you bog down. Let's just say that its reality as an expression of teaching is demonstrable, and that's what I mean to do. I mean to show its reality as teaching. Everything else, every other aspect of its reality, we won't concern ourselves with. And please don't think I'm saying by that there's anything unreal about it. It's the most real thing there is. So, these two black lines delineate a column. No bottom to it, no top to it. Up here is the word heaven, and down here is the word earth. I use those words because those are the words that are used in the traditional teaching on this, and because they show up in Lotus Blossom, how to grow Lotus Blossom. Phrases like heaven penetrates earth, earth penetrates heaven. So what I want to talk in general today about is what these things mean in a general way. And then, presumably, this talk will lead into talking about each of the five columns. So, heaven means the realm of the eternal. Earth means the realm of us and our karma. If you think of the realm of the eternal, the realm of karma, that's good enough. Heaven, realm of the eternal. Earth, realm of karma. The column is like an umbilical cord between us and the eternal. And just as a little baby within its mother, an unborn baby within its mother, cannot be said to be apart from the mother, and yet is its own little being as well, so we cannot be said to be apart from the eternal, and we are our own being as well. Our unapartness from the eternal, our oneness with the eternal is what's called the all is one. Our being our own being, being responsible for our own choices, that is the realm of what's called the all is different. And Remaster, from the earliest days that I heard her teaching, she would say, enlightenment is seen out of both eyes. One eye, the all is different. The other eye, the all is one. The fundamental truth is that these are two poles, or two aspects of one reality. Now, if you think of a there's a lot of ways you can think of the column, but think of it as a pipe or a conduit. It means that there's always access from the earth side to the heaven side, and there's always access from the heaven side to the earth side. So a column is a, it could be thought of as a, to use a more modern way of thinking, a pathway of communication. And it's never just a one-way pathway, it's always a two-way pathway. Earth is at one end, heaven at the other, and there's always a route between them. In practice, what does this mean? In practice, it means that however remote you may feel or believe yourself to be from the eternal at any time, the reality is that you're always connected. You're always a part of the eternal, and there's always access to the eternal. And this is a reality that one has to, a fact or a truth that one has to explore through one's practice. I mean, the purpose of training is to prove that true and to explore the ramifications of it. Not to explore it in the sense of curiosity, but to actually go through the karmic conversion that is entailed by this fact. You are never separate from God. However you have convinced yourself, and beings in your stream of karma have convinced themselves to the contrary. Let's look at things. I just talked about this relationship between heaven and earth from the earth point of view. Let's look at it from the heaven point of view. If you were to say that the earth point of view is a point of view dominated by our need, the heaven point of view is a point of view dominated by compassion and by the ability to meet the need. If the earth point of view is a point of view that emphasizes a longing to return to what River Master so beautifully called recognized reunion with the eternal, the heaven point of view includes within it the fact that there never was a separation, and that that longing is really the longing of that which is ignorant of that truth that there never was a separation, to be shed of the ignorance and to know its oneness with the eternal. In other words, there is always reciprocity in this. For every aspect of earth, there's an aspect of heaven. For every aspect of heaven, there's an aspect of earth. Two poles of one unity. Notice that this is a vertical column. If you think about it, a pipe could have been put in any way, but a column has to be vertical. This really emphasizes the position of what you could, well, I've sometimes talked about as the partnership. There's a senior partner and there's a junior partner. The earth position is the junior partner position. The heaven position is the senior partner position. The big problems in life come when we're confused about who the boss is and the nature of this verticalness, verticality. The first job of every monk is to come to comprehend and to respect verticality, the vertical. You cannot proceed as a monk you do not respect the vertical. Within monastic sangha, that is, the vertical is represented by seniority. And that's why the newer monks must cultivate a reverence for and a profound respect for the more senior monks, and that they cannot proceed in training. Training will not deepen for them if they are confused in this regard. It's a natural enough position to take, but it's surprising how some people can't do that and therefore can't succeed as monks. In general, in training, if there is not humility, there cannot be progress. The last rule of the Tai Tai Koho, always there is someone senior to you. The point of seniority is not to oppress that the more privileged oppress the less privileged. The point of seniority is that if you can get it into your blood and bones early in your training, that can gradually flower into the understanding of the seniority of the eternal and of your proper relationship with respect to the eternal, so that you can learn how to come to the eternal with an open and heart full of faith and trust and ask for help, and how you can learn to be still enough and reverential enough to actually put the time and effort into the listening for the response and the cultivation of the willingness to do that which is sometimes difficult to do when the response comes and it goes against your ego, which it so often will. The Reverend Master so often said, we are here to train self. And it's amazing how easily we forget that. But we are here to train self. That's what this place is about. This is a self-training machine or engine here, this monastery. Yet how easily we forget that. You're not here to feel secure. You're not here to be comfortable. You're not here to be encouraged by others. You're not here to be supported by others. You are here to work on self and to pay the price and to pay it gladly. And the person who will not do that cannot succeed. We've got to play by the rules. The fact that this column has earth and heaven identified also is about responsibility. There is a responsibility that is the earth sphere of responsibility that can only be done by the earth side of things. Another way to put that is that I have to put my will in gear and put it in gear in the right direction in order to train, and that the eternal will not do that for me. I see that as an aspect of the respect of the eternal for our fundamental oneness with the eternal. The true love does not force itself upon the beloved. And so, as Rim Master said sometimes, the eternal time to meaning, the eternal can wait. And if we choose not to engage our will in the correct way, it doesn't cost the eternal anything, it costs us. The eternal can wait forever. Till someone gets hold of the will in our stream of karma and gets it moving. Whether it's us or not doesn't fundamentally matter. Look at it this way. we aren't loved less if we don't. It's kind of the inverse or the converse of what I was just saying, really. Infinite love only knows how to love. It's going to love you if you're an axe murderer, rapist, worst person in the world, just as much as if you're a saint. Or a Buddha, better than a saint. It doesn't mean anything to the eternal because it's all the same to the eternal. It means something to me because if I'm an axe murderer, rapist, worst person in the world, I am the most miserable person in the world. That kind of love can seem cold-hearted to people, and a lot of people struggle with this. There's nothing cold-hearted about it. It is love beyond our comprehension, and whenever we turn towards it, there it is. Oh, now you want to get going. Okay, well, it doesn't hold a grudge. You can defy it, you can fight against it. It doesn't mean anything to it. It doesn't retain a memory. It doesn't retain a memory of our selfishness and of our willfulness. Whenever we turn towards it, it's a new day. And that's all that matters. Which means that the column is always open, the pipe's always open to the eternal, no matter what anyone has done or what they could conceivably do. It's we who stand in our own shadow. When we're ready to turn around and look a different direction, there it is. You prove this to yourself time and again. You prove it to yourself over and over again by getting off track and then rediscovering what it is to be on track. You prove it again and again and again. The eternal has the eternal's responsibility, and no one can take that responsibility. You know, I've been talking about our responsibility, now I'm talking about the eternal's responsibility. The eternal has the eternal's responsibility, if you can call it that. I'm not sure you can, but man cannot do that. We're not God. So if we overreach ourselves and try to be God, it won't work. We can't take the eternal's responsibility. We cannot be the source of compassion for the world. We cannot be the source of love for the world. We cannot be that which saves others. We cannot be that which saves ourselves. Really, I don't think it's as appropriate to call it responsibility when you speak of the eternal as to speak of grace, really. Because that's how it's experienced. When we experience it as grace. And there's no way you can earn it. It just is. It just is. And if we deliberately close ourselves off to it, it won't force itself upon us. Ramesh used to say something that is a good principle of training for us, but it also is talking about the way the eternal works. The real truth does not insist on truth. It's important for us to remember that when we're getting full of our own opinions about how things should be. The real truth does not insist on truth. The things that we think of as so real and true, when we're getting that way, they don't matter. They're not realities. Because the real truth does not insist on truth. The real love does not care whether it is loved. It just loves. The real giving does not care whether it gets anything in return. It just gives. The real generosity. when you have this diagram here, what you have is the potential for a bunch of teaching to follow. When you have this kind of template of the column, you then have something that can be done within that. The different positions that are taken, a movement in one direction and then a movement in the other direction. And if you read up on the five columns in Lotus Blossom, which I encourage everyone to do during these talks, you'll see that happening. What I've tried to describe today is the basic form within which this teaching is being given. And if you just abstract from the particular experiences and just look at, well, what is the message here? What is the teaching that's coming through? Then you see the practical things that are pointing out, practical points that illumine aspects of our training. You know, how to ask for help, how to do Sangha, how to sit still through the karmic washing, how to be open to the teaching that comes down, comes in, how to sit with a childlike joy in the midst of the fountain of the Eternal's love. How to take refuge in the stillness of meditation and root ourselves there and give our will to it gladly and fully and wholeheartedly. All of that is contained, and more is contained within the teaching of the five columns. I actually just walked this very quickly through the five columns. Not talking about something like, it's so easy to read this book and to, man, this is so far out. What's going on here? And just miss the point. And if you, the way you see the point in each one, the clue is always given in River Master's attitude. Look at the attitude. And then look at the way she explains the practical teaching about how to live life with reference to each of those columns. And that's what I'm going to emphasize if I keep doing these talks. And, well, I just had this come up to do this today, so we'll see where it goes from here. I think I've gone through all my little points. A short talk.